Welcome to Derailed Trains of Thought. So, welcome back. This is episode 18. This is Nick Hayden, a.k.a. Jose Chen.
And this is Timothy Deal, a.k.a. Y538's Los.
Wow, we're really out there today. So what's yours there, Tim?
Well, it's another one from the playing pretend days. It's a character I had.
Sound like an assassination robot from Star Wars.
I think the idea was to make it like a code name that no one could possibly guess. So I just strung together parts of Spanish names with a couple random numbers thrown in.
Nice. So I will have to apologize. Mine is not actually a nickname. I think at the end of nicknames. But it is kind of a corporate name. My siblings and I, one time we were going to create this comedy show. And we were going to call it Jose Chen Sweet Yesterday. Which I thought was hilarious. So we were, you know, Jose Chen. Like Monty Python, Jose Chen.
You could have saved that for a crackpots corner, you know.
Well, that's true. Well, I can bring the idea up again, you know.
Well, but then it's not new.
Oh, crackpot corner has to be new?
Well, new to the podcast, that's true. Anyway.
Actually, I had a crazy idea the other day I was going to save away, and I've since forgotten.
That's the one bad thing about crackpots corners in this show, though, isn't it? Because now we're like, okay, we gotta wait to use this for, you know, next time we record.
And then who knows when we do it. Listener feedback. So, we had our first, drumroll, Tim, email!
Ta-da!
I feel like I should say that in Strong Bad's voice.
Email!
That is a great rendition. Okay, so, we had our first email by our longtime listener and...
Frequent contributor,
Nathan Marchand, emailed us. He suggested two ideas for future themes, and all we will tell you is that we have decided to take one of them for next episode.
You'll just have to wait.
You'll just have to wait. And the second we might end up using at some point, but...
But don't feel bad if, even though Nathan has beat everyone to getting the first email, you can send us the second.
And if you're not first, you're last. I mean, you're just as good. So, I think, and then Nathan also left a very long and multifaceted comment on the boards about magic, which is worth reading, and I need to actually get back and answer the second half of it.
Yeah, there's a lot there in which we didn't get to, but we're not going to yet because we got a lot of ground to cover today. So, but it's a good comment. Good reading.
Oh, and then we have an announcement.
Yes. We're coming up really rapidly on our 18th episode. I'm sorry. Well, this All is right. our 18th episode.
We're here, Tim. We made it.
Yay. No, we're coming up very rapidly on our 20th episode, which will also commemorate our first year of podcasting. And so for that anniversary, we thought we're going to have something special, and we thought it'd be fun to get some audio segments from some of our listeners and maybe some people who have already been on the podcast.
So if you have something you always wanted to say, you want to contribute to an old conversation, you just want to, you know, rave and rant about the most recent movie, whatever, hopefully it's vaguely related to something we've talked about at some point.
Basically, make this your time. A lot of it will be kind of... You know, I meant to say this, but now is your chance.
So if you want to get your two cents in on something Tim and I have discussed, this is the time to do it. Don't make it much more than a minute, but in any sort of audio file, send it to us at our email, which is derailedtrains@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we'd be more than happy to add it to episode 20.
So you can be heard by all the tens of people that listen.
Dozens, even.
Dozens.
All right, so we'll remind you about that at the end of the podcast as well. I think we'll just go ahead and jump straight into Story School. So, Story School today, we threw around lots of different ideas for this particular episode. We have quite a list of things we want to talk about, but nothing sounded good. And then I throw out the idea of talking about tragedies.
Something bad.
Something bad. So today we're going to talk about tragedies. And I think for the sake of this discussion, we're going to count a tragedy as any major instance in a movie, a book, play, where bad, undeserved things happen to good people.
Or sometimes deservedly bad things, but...
You don't want it to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess I'll go ahead and start off with Aristotle mentioned when he's talking about, I think it's in Poetics, talking about how you make a tragic figure in Greek plays. And we're going to expand past that. But he talks about the fatal flaw, where you give someone who's mostly noble some blind spot or some particular flaw that you can understand but causes their downfall, and then you weep for them because they were mostly a good person, but this one thing caused their downfall. In Oedipus Rex, I think it's Pride, not listening to the prophecies. I'm not actually sure what the text, it's been a long time since I've read Oedipus Rex. But in Shakespearean plays, in like Othello, it's jealousy. In Macbeth, it's ambition, that sort of thing. Where you want the character to succeed, but you know because of this one thing, everything's going to unravel and poof.
It's interesting. I have to admit, I've not read a whole lot of Shakespeare. I just recently read and watched the most recent adaptation of Hamlet, which you had talked about some time ago on here, Nick, I think, about the David Tennant.
Oh, I think it did. You're right.
And Jean-Luc Picard. Yeah. I was trying to think. Patrick Stewart, that's his name, that both of them were in. But it's interesting because I'm not sure I see the Aristotelian flaw that you're talking about in Hamlet. Because in a sense, Hamlet to me seems like it's a lot of a particular act of sin, in a sense, the king murdering and taking his brother's throne and all, that in effect it kind of spirals, it's like a big spiral downward until essentially most of the castle is going mad, it seems like. Yeah. Hamlet's racked with, you know, concerns. Ophelia loses her father and she goes mad, and then the very end is like whole world's gone mad because like everybody seems to be dying.
Yeah, like, hey, let's have a sword fight and we'll poison one of them and then everyone will die.
I guess if Hamlet has a fatal flaw, it's the fact that he's so overracked with feeling, and so much so to an extent that it kind of paralyzes him.
Yeah, and I'm far from being a Shakespearean expert. But Hamlet is a strange, and I'm not sure it fits quite in what we're going to talk about for tragedy today, but it is strange because it doesn't follow, Hamlet's a weird character. He talks a lot. He does very little.
Uh-huh.
I've read people say that that's kind of our first modern or postmodern play. A hero that's examining himself. Most of the conflict he has is his own awareness of his own inabilities to do things.
Well, it was an interesting thing.
Hyper-consciousness, I think, is what they talk about in Dostoevsky.
Okay. It was an interesting thing to read in the sense that while I was reading the play, I kept thinking, man, Hamlet does not strike me as the typical Hollywood protagonist at all. Because a big thing about a typical Hollywood protagonist is that they're very driven. They're very goal-oriented. They have a vision for what they want to do. And in one hand, it seems like Hamlet would have that. You know, he wants revenge for his father's murder. But he spends so much time and just trying to figure out, what should I do? Is it better to live or die? Life is pain. What do I do in this? And he spends so much time in this kind of, like you said, existential quandary with himself that in the end, what happens, it's not really his initiative. I mean, his initiative really only goes as so far as to confirm for himself that the ghost was telling the truth and that the king was guilty. But the denouement, the climax, is spurred by the villain, in a sense. Hamlet, I'm still not sure what Hamlet had planned to do after he returned to the castle. I haven't quite figured out what his plan was, because he just gets into the sparring match and that's it.
It's almost because there's a lot of passages about the sinfulness of the world, how twisted everything is. It's like a person looking at that and having no idea how to even begin tackling justice in a world where bad things happen for no good reason, which is kind of the whole idea of tragedy, is that bad things happen maybe for a reason, but in a way that you're like, but this isn't the ending we wanted.
Yeah.
And for him, I guess that's not the ending he wanted. I mean, by the end, maybe you're sick of him, but...
Well, but I mean, it is different from a typical protagonist, but I think it also strikes very true to real life. I mean, how many of us facing something new or something unexpected or something that they're, you know, stressing over, we just kind of whine and try to figure out what we're going to do next and are more racked with guilt rather than, in that sense, Hamlet is really much more like us than your typical Hollywood hero.
That's very true. Because Hollywood heroes, like you said, always, they make a decision immediately. You know, their parents die and they become Batman.
Yeah.
Where, you know, normally their parents die and they're messed up for the rest of their life.
Yeah. Well, which Batman is.
Well, but. Okay, granted. But they don't become crime fighters either.
Yeah, most, yeah.
They become more like people from Watchmen.
That is very true. That's
speaking of tragedy.
Yeah.
We're not quite. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, then we'll come back maybe to Watchmen and other things.
Okay, yeah.
Here's a question. I used to have these discussions back in college, saying, from a Christian point of view, generally you want to end, maybe not a happy ending, with a hopeful ending, because that's how Christians view the world. Even when bad things happen, we talked about this in our villains podcast.
Yeah.
You know, when bad things happen, there's an eventual good ending. You know, eventually God wins in our biblical story. But what is the place, do you think, of having things not end well?
Well, it's interesting you phrase the question in that way, because I do remember there was a period of time in high school where I was kind of against unhappy endings to a certain extent. I think my stance was kind of, you know, there's enough pain and suffering in this world. Why should I watch a movie or read a book about these characters that's not going to be uplifting, that's going to make me come out of it feeling depressed at the end? Why do I want to subject myself to this? Especially since, like you said, in the end, my Christian belief tells me that there is hope and that in the end, evil will be punished and good will prevail. Why do I want to do this? And I think it wasn't until in college, strangely enough, I kind of think Cowboy Bebop was sort of instrumental in making me kind of reevaluate my views on this. Because Cowboy Bebop kind of got around my defenses. Because, you know, a lot of times, and we may talk more about this later, but a lot of times you get this kind of air of pretentiousness of movies that end unhappily. Like, this is more real life. And so you become kind of aware of that, and you're not going to watch those movies. Whereas in anime, I love animation. It's going to be, it's a story medium that I can, you know, I want to experiment with. And so I think it was very interesting when Cowboy Bebop has a very unhappy, tragic ending, trying to deal with that. Okay, well, why did they do this? And what I kind of came away with was, I think as you grow up, you do sort of come to internalize a lot of, you know, the grief that our world is really messed up. And to not tackle that honestly in a story sometimes, I mean, to not have any stories that tackle that honestly, I think would be a big oversight. You look in the Bible, there are some stories that ended very unhappily.
Yeah.
Particularly in Judges or in the books of history.
Oh, Judges.
But I'm trying to remember now what your original question
was. Well, no, I think you covered it. Because I've come around, too. I used to be that most things are end, hopefully. And I think probably the majority of my work probably will. But I'm certainly not against tackling real, having things end badly. I think, personally, when I write them, I want them to end badly and then to say something about this situation. You know, end badly, why? And then you can go back and look, oh, it's because this or that or this, the decision the person made. I think that's what Shakespeare tries with, like, Othello. Obviously, everything ends badly because you got your, this is the flaw that happened. And so I think tragedy can be a really powerful medium to say, it's like a backhanded way of talking about the world. Or maybe good, happy ending is the back way of talking about the world. I don't know. But where you're making a point by saying this is the negative version in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up another interesting point that I wanted to tackle. And why, or do you think that tragic stories are inherently more literary? They tend to be viewed that way.
I do think they tend to be viewed that way. And I don't think it necessarily should be, but I'm not sure how to get around that. I think one reason why they're considered more literary is, well, again, for one thing, you don't always see happy endings. So to a certain extent, if you're making a sad or tragic ending, then it indicates to some people that you're not necessarily just pandering to the masses.
Well, I was going to say that tragedy or tragic situations tend to be, I won't tend to be, but I think they appear more realistic. More how things work. Where happy endings, and partly because there's been lots of movies that'll take the cheap way to a happy ending.
Right.
Are contrived.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really good happy endings aren't contrived. They're natural upbringings. Right. But I think it's easier to write a naturally tragic story.
Than one that people will say, you pulled some sleight of hand
to make us, you tricked us to make us feel sad for this person. It's not that hard to make someone feel sad for a person.
Mm. If you put it that way, that's interesting that a really good happy ending is actually harder to pull off than a tragic one, which is an interesting point.
I think it's probably true. I think it's probably foreign to most of our actual experience.
Now, on the other hand, I can also see how, you know, in a regular story that ends well, you often have a climax where it seems like everything could go really bad. I also think in some of the really best tragedies, you also have a moment where it looks like everything might turn out for the best.
But they don't.
But they don't.
I think that's a great point. And I was thinking, we mentioned way back, I think, in our Villains podcast about Lando Malari and his arc, which is very tragic. And there's multiple times during his journey where he could have changed. He could have done something different.
Yeah.
Now, it's a tragic partly because at the end he realizes then, but it's too late to make much of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a classic way to make a tragic ending where it becomes too late. They realize too late something.
The Bridge on the River Kwai has an ending a lot like that, which I don't think you've seen
it yet. I haven't yet seen it yet.
No. I'm sure Brian will bring it up in Cinema Selections, but that happens in that one too.
I really like that. The late. And the possible good ending turning bad. Because I guess we know it's going to be bad from the beginning. It just kind of beats you down.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's some tragedies or some stories that just, it's constantly one bad thing after another. And like, what's the purpose of this? You don't even see a hope of anything happening. It's just like, you're being beat across the head. Natasha saw Winter's Bone. And I guess it feels like that.
Really?
I've not seen the movie, but she says it's just a horrible situation through the whole thing. You never feel any good towards it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that reminds me, I saw a movie recently which had a ray of hope at the end, but, oh, Magnolia. A lot of people love Magnolia, especially people who enjoy independent film types. And I have to say, I mean, it's a very daring movie. It's like one of these, it's a 3-hour long movie made in like 2000. It's got all these people's stories interweaving. A lot of people say it was kind of the inspiration for Crash. Crash is a lot like it. You know, all these stories where these people's lives are loosely related, but they all have a specific theme. But it's hard. It was hard for me to get through just because all these people's lives just sucked. I mean, and at the very end, there's this miracle and it's like this ray of hope. But for me, I'm like, is it really going to change their lives? When you've been kind of wallowing through that all, you know, this whole time, it's hard to say, you know, whether a single instance could change it. Aside from, you know, actual conversion, it was short of that, obviously, because it wasn't a Christian film. But I think even in Hamlet, you see there's some instances where you kind of get a glimpse, maybe not that everything is going to turn out well. That's probably not going to happen. But there, you get some glimpses sometimes of, well, what might have happened if, because like right before their duel, Hamlet and Laertes kind of shake and make up at least for the incident at the graveside. And even in the midst of the duel, Laertes has a moment of regret. And you're kind of like, well, could this have been avoided? Probably not, but if only.
Yeah. Well, I have several things, but I guess mentioning that, one of my favorite, I guess, tragic movies was Brazil.
You've told me many times Brazil was very memorable.
Brazil impacted me quite a bit, and Brian will be happy to hear that because he gave it to me to watch. But the interesting thing about Brazil, it's a dark comedy, very dark in some ways. And the ending, the director...
Terry Gilliam,
thank you. Director said, and the writer, said that it's one of those endings that, well, anyways, at the end, it's a dystopian, just a whole, you know, it's gone wrong, and he's trying to escape from it, he's trying to make changes, and it doesn't happen, obviously. But he escapes by basically going mad, or by having a lobotomy, basically. So the sad ending is the happy ending for the main character, that he then gets to live in a better world because half his mind's been taken away.
Huh.
So it's kind of a messed up ending.
Yeah, it's kind of twisted. Now, is that the director's cut? Because I think that didn't that version have several different...
Yeah, that's a good cut.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was one of those where it's tragic because you wanted him to succeed in doing what he wanted to do, but the writer at least claims that that's the only way you could see of him actually escaping a world like this.
Hmm.
Because he was always trying to escape from this very bureaucratic absurd world into this world of fantasy and dreams. And I got a lot of different ideas. I'm not sure where I'm going with them yet.
You're not sure how they all connect?
How they all connect. Yeah, this topic's hard because I don't necessarily know how they all connect. It's just ideas I have.
Uh-huh.
I guess here's the other thing. Do you think there's a difference? And I think there probably is. Between a tragic thing that happens due to the person's own something about themselves, as opposed to something happening randomly for an outside source. I mean, like, here's my biggest gripe on the outside source thing, which I think is hard to pull off realistically. I mean, in a way that doesn't come off like, life's random, you know, suck it up. A separate piece, the book I read in 8th grade, did not like it at all. And at the end, one of the characters dies from falling down the stairs, breaking his leg, and bone marrow gets in his bloodstream. And you're like, and I don't, maybe some symbolism that makes sense now when I'm older. All I remember isn't completely random. Like, that's how you're going to end your book?
That sounds a lot like actually my reaction to Vertigo.
Well, okay, and that's explained.
Okay, well, all right. I know some people love Vertigo. I can't stand it. I mean, the first time was partly my own fault. I had a different interpretation of what Jimmy Stewart was doing in the second half of the movie. But the second time, when I was watching through, to me, Vertigo is like, there's a difference sometimes between whether a filmmaker achieves an effect, which I think Hitchcock achieved an effect very well, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's an effect that I care to watch or go through, and I think has any kind of value. Because to me, Vertigo demands a lot of its audience without giving back anything in return except frustration. It's a crazy mind game kind of movie. A lot of it is delving into the psyche of the main character. But it's not a pleasant journey. And the ending, the girl just like, they're on top of this tower. He's accusing her of involving him in this whole murder plot. And this person in robes shows up. And the girl who's been so terrified and kind of traumatized by this accusation, she kind of takes a step backwards and she falls out of the tower. I'm like, what? It was just a nun coming in, and it was like this, so it was this dark figure. So people was like, she saw death coming or something. I'm like, why? Like, she just takes a step backwards, she falls off, Jimmy Stewart looks down, and that's the end. What was the purpose of that? I learned nothing.
So I'll have to agree with you. I think generally, I'll disagree with someone Vertigo, but in general, I think the tragic that just comes randomly, like, at the last minute, something jumps out or pushes you off or lightning strikes, generally seems kind of cheap. I mean, I'm sure it's done well in some ways, but maybe that's the tragic version of the happy ending out of nowhere.
It's like the idea that life is just out to kill you and this world is harsh and terrible.
Yeah, which only actually works in Final Destination.
Apparently, yeah, they've made, what, 5 movies out of that concept?
Well, but that's the whole concept, I mean.
And I think a lot of horror movies are like that, which is why I won't go to them. Because it's just a bad situation that you really only go through for the chills, and there's not much else to it.
I remember, every once in a while, and I don't know if you should bring Battlestar up again.
do it. I mean, I tempted fate by criticizing Hitchcock, so.
I don't remember exactly, but it seems like occasionally horrible things would happen just because that's what happened in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember the beginning of one episode where, I can't remember one's name, which is probably horrible, but his wife just commits suicide, and there wasn't everything's depressing, I get that, and it was just sort of like, what? Really? And then, you know, and that starts a whole downward spiral for that character. I'm sure it was set up some, but I don't know. It just sometimes seems, let's make things as horrible as possible.
Because that's dramatic.
And I think tragedy needs to have a reason it's sad.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and I think that if
just like a happy ending should have a reason it's happy.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I think it is possible that a story could have a valid reason for the ending to happen outside of the main character's control. If you're trying to say something about society, you could be saying something about, you know, if it's the character's fault, it usually says something about human nature.
But it could say something about, you know, how the structure of the company's made, or the structure of the society's made, I think that's good.
Could be about human nature of the other people involved in the story, not just the main.
Speaking of things coming out and killing you randomly. Okay, you've seen Stranger Than Fiction.
Yes.
Should that have ended unhappily or happily? I mean, at the end, she rewrites it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the question that whole movie comes up with. Is that dishonest to rewrite the ending?
Well, I love that her response to when the professor asks her that. Because she says, basically, it's one thing to kill off this character when he doesn't know anything about it. But if he knows that he's about to die and he goes through with it anyway, well, isn't that the kind of man you would want to save? To me, I think that kind of answers the question. And Stranger the Fiction is about, well, it's about a number of things. But it's about a man finding purpose beyond his mundane life.
Well, and I think it works, the happy ending, because like you point out, it's also about that writer finding purpose beyond just these tragic...
Because all she was writing was tragic stories.
Yeah, so, I mean, I suppose Dustin Hoffman, mm-hmm. character, the teacher, could say, literally, shouldn't he have stayed dead? It makes more sense, da 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 da. But because we're watching the movie about the writer writing the book, it makes more sense...
Yeah.
For her to make the change.
Mm-hmm. And she acknowledged that she was going to have to go back and make her visions, yeah. that she changed.
Yeah, exactly.
But
so, changed ending. Other movies that you think that ended either badly, that you thought they could have just pushed a little farther and would have been happy, or happy ones that should have stopped about 5 minutes earlier. Here's my example.
I was going to say, you're putting me on the spot.
I got two examples.
Okay.
One is Limitless, which my wife just watched.
Okay.
It's about this drug that lets you use all, like, 100% of your brain, but it has a lot of addictive properties, and because it's rare, people are always trying to hunt you down because they want it. And I only watched the last half because I was grading papers or something. But at the end, he's down to his last one, and he does the, you know, he's barely escapes getting killed. It's a couple years later, he's figured out how to make more. And he's a politician, and this guy in charge of the drug company comes and says, look, we just took over your stash, you're going to work for me now. I thought it should have ended there, because then it shows that this drug, which the whole movie has been showing, has, as good as it is, has side effects and things. You can't get away, like a Twilight Zone ending, mm-hmm. you know, where there's that twist at the end, like, oh no! But what they did then is they moved it a little farther, and then the main character said, oh, you might have destroyed my stash, but I got off it a while ago, and I had tweaked it so that I could keep all the powers without using the drug. And I'm like, really? I mean, I guess it's a happy ending, but is that what you want to say? That this drug, that the whole movie's kind of like, is it good, is it bad? You just tweak it, keep all the benefits without any of the responsibility?
Uh-huh.
I thought it should have ended 5 minutes earlier, and it would have been a cool Twilight Zone twist ending. Because I think sometimes bad endings are that sort of sickening twist, but you take secret joy out of because it kind of hit you on the side of the face.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is AI. I like how it ended, but I always joke that there's a Kubrick ending and then there's a Spielberg ending. You've seen AI, it's the story of Pinocchio done with in the future with a robot. Really, really good movie. I mean, I really enjoy it. But there's this moment where the robot, Haley Joel Osment, I forget what the robot's name is begging this fake blue fairy from like Coney Island to make him a real boy. And it kind of just pans out and fades out then. And that would have been the Kubrick ending, I think. I mean, I don't know. And then it jumps like 10,000 years in the future, and everything's frozen, aliens find the boy, and give him a little happy ending. Which I'm glad of, because it would have broken your heart to have the other thing be the ending. But I could see some people crying foul on, possibly.
Yeah, I could see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it does seem kind of like a little deus ex machina, like, ba-dum!
Yeah.
Look, not a horrible, 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 depressing ending.
Well, I did manage to think of two, I don't remember if it exactly answers your question, but two worthy of discussion. First was one that I think was kind of divisive ending, and that would be for Unbreakable, which is a mostly happy ending until you find out in the twist ending at the end that one of the characters was actually a villain that set the whole thing up. I think it's a valid ending. I think it holds true with the philosophy that's expressed in the movie.
I agree, and it holds true to the comic book feel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, best friends are always worse enemies in a comic book.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. I think I could see how you would be like, you just turned it bad, but...
And I know someone at Regent who said that he was just infuriated by that movie. Like, he stood up in the theater and screamed or something because he thought it invalidated all the good that Bruce was. But I was like, I know I don't really agree with the yin-yang philosophy, but that is kind of what they were expressing through all the time. So I thought it made sense. The other one I would case I've heard of with an alternate ending that I don't know if they actually ever filmed, but the lead actor wanted to, was Terminator Salvation with Christian Bale. I don't know if you know this story. But I guess an original ending, because at the end, I think there's this Terminator robot that had been programmed to do good, and at the end he sacrifices himself, I think, to give John Connor more life because John Connor's his leader. I think the twist ending that had been proposed at one time was that John Connor would actually have been suddenly infused with Terminator technology. And so basically it would have meant that he had been, it was all a ploy to get cybernetics in him. And so then that means the evil robot company was
Skynet.
Skynet. So in the end, Skynet would have won, which I think would have been a terrible ending. I mean, that's it's like a middle finger kind of at the very end of the whole Terminator franchise.
Because I think audiences, maybe we can wrap up with this. I think audiences, if they're going to put up with a tragedy, if they're going to sit through something, most people want to go to a movie and have it be better than real life.
Mm-hmm. And reading a book, especially if you're putting all that time
into it. And reading a book. I think if they're going to put up with an ending where the main character dies, or is horribly maimed, or loses what they care most about, they're going to want a reason.
Yeah.
Besides just like, and the bad guys win, mm-hmm. or the world's horrible, unless you're writing like Camus or something.
Which is incidentally one reason why I don't really have much interest in seeing Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Because, I mean, isn't a prequel, don't you already know that apparently monkeys take over the planet? It's never a concept I've been interested in, but... But I agree. I mean, I think you can have a very, you know, tragic, sad ending if there's a reason for it and if you're trying to say something worthwhile.
Yeah, and I think then...
I mean, some examples, we mentioned Londo. He has a very sad ending, I think, probably just about any of Shakespeare's tragedy. And Cowboy Bebop is a great...
Cowboy Bebop, maybe to segue, Evangelion really shouldn't have a good ending.
No, it really shouldn't.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense with anything else that happened. At least in the way the TV show ran. I don't know how the new series is going to run. Maybe it'll set some stuff up for a good ending.
Possibly. I mean, we've only seen the one, so who knows.
I think tragedy is certainly a valid format. I don't think it would argue that. But I think it has a lot of possibilities sometimes I haven't fully experimented with.
You've done some in flash fiction.
I've done in some flash fictions. Natasha's done some with, in Story Project, Katrina's story is very tragic.
Mm-hmm. There's some glimmer of hope, but it's not the fairy tale ending you want. It's clear her story is still going to go on after the project is over.
And I guess I'll mention this. I think tragic American audience are more willing to put up with tragic endings in an episodic show where one or two episodes might end horrible, but you know there's always another installment possible. Like we've been watching Stargate Universe, and occasionally it'd be very ambiguous or slightly endings.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not, like, beat down by them because you got next week.
Yeah.
I think Battlestar most time ran like that in a good way.
That makes sense. And I think a lot of crime dramas.
I think certainly, well, it was like the one Lost episode where Libby gets killed by...
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Nikki and Paolo.
No, well, that's almost as funny as tragic.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Like, you're like, ha-ha, oh. No, but Hurley's having the picnic. He's finally worked on courage to go out with his girl, and she gets shot.
Yeah.
Like, completely accidental.
And you're just like...
And that's one of those where the accidental thing works because it plays out later.
Yeah.
You know, there's ramifications. Right. But if it just happens and it's the end...
Yeah, if that was the end of the show, man, that would...
I think tragic ramifications are very fertile ground.
Mm-hmm. That's key.
So, that's what I've got.
All right, that's what we got. So, they've got a place if they have a reason.
I guess send us in your... just in comments, wherever. Tell us your favorite tragic movies.
Yeah.
Or movies that you wish would have ended earlier and been tragic.
Or differently and been happy.
If that's possible, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I think we're ready to move on.
All right, so first off, soundtrack. What's going on?
What's going on? What's going on? Okay, for my soundtrack today... I decided to go with something from Kingdom Hearts. Well, again, won't be able to use the whole thing because it's not a remix, unfortunately. But it's a beautiful song. It first premiered in the final mix version of Kingdom Hearts 2, the like Japanese only release. But I familiarize it more with the DS game 358 over 2 days, which I've now I'm just called 358 days because that's so much a better title. would have been. But, which is, in my view, arguably the saddest of the Kingdom Hearts series. I mean, it's very melancholy throughout. I mean, Birth by Sleep ends with some sad things, but there's also some ray of hope. The thing with 358 Days is that you kind of already know the ending, and so there's this kind of foreboding sense over the whole game. Plus, Roxas is one of a long line of Square characters that are not technically supposed to exist. Not in the sense that they were their creation and the game was an accident, but that in the game universe, their very existence was an accident, which leads to a lot much sadness and angst and emotiveness. But it also leads to some beautiful music in this case. This is called The Other Promise by the wonderful Japanese composer Yoko Shimomura. And that was The Other Promise.
Very good. I'll listen to it when this podcast comes out. All right, so next up is our take
on Tales.
So we decided to do a special take on Tales. It's been actually a couple of episodes since we've done one of these.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, wait. No, we did Les Mis not too long ago.
2 episodes ago?
Okay.
Well, 15? I don't remember now.
So, anyways, we decided to do a special one. We're going to kind of do a wrap-up of summer movies.
Ta-da. Yeah, ta-da. It's the end of August, and summer is probably the time, I don't know about you, Nick, but it's probably the time I go to the theater the most often.
Yeah, I think so. I think right around November, December, depending if we're having a kid or not.
Yeah. Oh, because, you know, it's the time when most of the movies that are the most fun to see on the big screen are out. And this year, we had 4 superhero movies. So
yeah,
they're
crazy.
And I don't think that, actually, in the whole summer season, I don't know that there was any one that stuck out as being the best or necessarily the worst. Of course, Nick and I, we haven't seen all of them.
Have you not seen...
I'm talking about summer movies in general.
Oh, summer movies. Yeah, we're not voracious movie watchers or goers. But we see a lot of the big ones.
Yeah, but I did see all 4 superhero films.
So let's start with, which was the first one? 4?
Thor was the first. Which I gotta say, incidentally, this summer was probably the summer of superheroes that you never expected to actually get movies, with the exception of X-Men. But Thor was different. It was new and fun.
I expected very little from Thor. I knew nothing and never seen a preview. I went and watched it and I thought, this is a lot of fun. I did not know Thor could be that fun of a movie.
I mean, same here. I knew nothing about Thor. And it was really interesting to see a superhero movie with deities. And that's something I had never been done before.
I mean, Asgard was great. Loki was a great character. Mm-hmm. I really liked him.
I think the only complaint I would have about it is that I thought Thor's conversion or change from being really selfish to being really helpful in servitude seemed like it happened awfully suddenly. I'm like, wow, he was on Earth for like 2 days and he completely changed his personality.
And I was happy. Sometimes I'm cautious of anything where you have the one person from the outside go into modern times. Mm-hmm. It's been done a lot.
Yeah.
I thought they did it really well in a way that was kind of, it felt fresh. It felt new and fun. And
for the most part, it wasn't overdone. I mean, they did the fish out of water bit, but it didn't seem stale or like they were taking cheap jokes with
And him smacking the plate or the cup on the ground, breaking it was, I just thought that was great.
Everyone drinking,
like,
more!
I kind of wish we knew more about his companions. I mean, you don't have time to move like that, but
yeah.
It was fun.
I wonder if that's a good question. I wonder if his human companions, sidekicks, love interests, I wonder if they'll appear in the Avengers at all.
That'd be interesting.
No, I mean, they're paying so much for the actual heroes themselves. It'll be interesting if they can afford Natalie Portman again.
That's true. So, and I didn't even know she was in it when I went to go see it. I knew nothing.
Wow.
So,
you obviously don't follow entertainment websites much.
I don't actually. Very, very seldom. Unless you, like, I get a link to it. Or my brother's like, you have to watch this preview. But I would give it a pretty solid, good popcorn movie.
Yeah, definitely. Should we give it some sort of rating?
I guess so. What kind of ratings are we giving them?
I don't know. Stars, thumbs,
pirate.
Marshmallows.
Marshy. It gets five train tracks.
4 out of 5 hammers. That was really lame.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd give it a 4 for a good old fun. Maybe 3. I'm no good at rating because all I know is that I enjoyed it and I'd tell people to go see it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair enough. So then what was next? I think next would have been X-Men. First Class.
Which I really enjoyed the prequel. I didn't care about some of the continuity problems. I kind of threw that out.
The continuity problems kind of bugged me after the fact. But it was, I mean, again, all the superhero movies are fun. This one was very enjoyable. And I will say one thing about X-Men in particular. Sometimes you get the feeling that in these superhero movies that they're kind of cutting costs. Like, they're not quite as cool as they would be in the comics because they've got budget restrictions. But honestly, where I felt they were using every character to their fullest. And that's probably one of the best, compliments you can give an ensemble superhero movie.
Yeah, because ensembles are hard because
there's so many characters and you want them all to do cool stuff.
And you're right. Most of them did cool things and they got a lot of characters in there I hadn't seen for a while. You know, Havok and Banshee and
mm-hmm.
I wanted to see more Darwin, but he got killed in like...
Yeah.
I just thought I had never heard of him. I don't keep up with modern Marvel anymore, but I thought that was a great power. He just defended himself.
And I knew some people online were like, they killed off the token black guy right away, like they always do. Sorry.
That's strange. I mean, I don't know if they even think like that. I don't know. I don't think it's at all canonical, but I really enjoyed the Mystique Professor X thing.
That was interesting. But I do have to kind of agree with some other critiques. They're like, why did she leave him? So, I mean, she grew up with this guy, and she's like, I like this other guy better. I'm going to my new boyfriend.
Near the end, some of the Magneto Mystique thing seemed a little rushed.
I kind of felt like the whole ending was a little rushed, which if there was a main weakness in this movie, it was the ending. Because it created a lot of continuity problems, but also sort of surprising in the sense that the whole Magneto and Professor X story, there was still fertile ground there. I mean, they could have spent a whole nother movie off of this concept of doing prequels.
Well, I think a lot of superhero movies, well, I don't know of just them, but they have great setups, especially when you're introducing new characters, which this prequel kind of did.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least an origin story.
Yeah.
I think origin stories have the weakness sometimes of they have great getting you into the characters and you seeing how they grow, but then you have to have some sort of big climactic ending sometimes before it's warranted. I think. Especially an origin story.
It's sort of like they felt like they had to get it wrapped up by the end of this movie, or they thought audiences would be confused or something.
A more ambiguous ending might have really played well in
I think so, because, I mean, as it is, it's hard to see why exactly Magneto and Professor X were on such good terms for so long, because it didn't seem like they were friends long enough to build up that same kind of amiable relationship.
Yeah.
So that was a complaint. And then just kind of the fact, as someone who didn't really grow up with reading X-Men, I kind of feel like all X-Men movies are sort of about the same thing.
Well, they kind of are, I think.
Yeah. But I think it would be fun to see an X-Men movie that was about... Because, I mean, no, they're not all... I mean, a lot of it is about prejudice and stuff, but they also battle aliens and other stuff, too.
That's what Fantastic Four is supposed to do.
Yeah.
But never have.
I think it'd be fun. I think it'd be a fun change for X-Men to not be about prejudice for a change.
Well, that's true. I guess it gives it a subtext that gives a little more weight.
Yeah, that's true.
Next
would be Green Lantern.
Oh, we're going to do all the superheroes first.
I figure that's just
superheroes. I have not seen Green Lantern.
Yeah. My
parents, I'll just throw this in here, really liked it.
Yeah, I felt it was a fun... It's a fun film. I do not think it deserved the bad tomato meter rating it got. I think that was very much uncalled for. I might admit that it could very well be the weakest of the superhero movies from this summer, and it pains me to say that because I love Green Lantern. But I think a problem that probably came up with this movie as far as some people's reactions to it, I think it is weakened a bit by it being an origin story, like you commented. I think Hal Jordan as a character works better as an established hero than in his origin story, personally. And that's true in the comics, too. Because what you've got is this guy, before he becomes a Green Lantern, he's a jet fighter pilot, and yet he's also dealing with fears and hesitation because his father died doing the same profession. But at the same time, it's kind of a hard situation to empathize with because most people think, oh, jet fighter pilot, you're pretty fearless. You've got, you know, you can handle this stuff. And a lot of, big part of Hal's origins arc is dealing with fear and not having fear. And so it seems kind of incongruous. Are you afraid or are you not afraid? So I think it's harder, especially when you got someone like Ryan Reynolds, who's naturally handsome. It's not like you have Peter Parker, who is this nobody.
Yeah.
But I think I really loved the fights. I thought it was well written. It's certainly not, to my mind, it wasn't a case where they were just trying to make, you know, money off of superhero property. Obviously, I think they want Green Lantern. They really wanted to make more Green Lantern movies. And I think they could if people would give them a chance, because I thought the fighting was fun. And I think there's a lot of good potential there for more.
I would like to see it, because I don't know a lot about Green Lantern, but what everything I read from him seems very interesting. And just seeing fights with the ring would be awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can summon shapes. The fights could take any number of... I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Now, here's a question. Now they're talking about superhero movies. I wonder, it'd be interesting to do a first superhero movie that wasn't origin. Just jump into it. Why not? I mean, has anyone ever done that?
That's a fair... I mean, yeah, that's a good question. Because, I mean, a lot of them are like... They seem to always have to start somewhere.
I mean, even
or
with,
as a sequel, unless it's a sequel.
I guess, actually, Thor wasn't really an origin movie at all.
Well, no. In the sense that...
Not in the sense that he's like, and now I've been born.
Yeah.
I mean, he was God to begin. Well, I guess he was becoming king. So I guess kind of origin-y.
And his interactions with Earth and that sense.
That's true. I think it'd be an interesting experiment, especially with superheroes that are relatively well-known. Like Superman, Spider-Man.
But it's still the case with Thor because, I mean, in a sense, his powers is already established. It's more of like he's growing into a new role rather than, wow, I've got new powers. What do I do with them?
Yeah, that's true, which I think maybe added to it a little bit. Yeah. Make it a little different.
It could be. I think that would be very valid to make a Superman movie without, you know, starting with, because everyone knows who Superman
is.
Yeah,
just throw us in the middle, you know,
which
in media res.
Which, incidentally, I think is one possible problem with the upcoming DC reboot universe thing. Because, like, on the other hand, with one hand, when we talk about reboots, I like the idea that they're getting rid of continuity that kind of weighs them down. But on the other hand, we know who Superman is.
Yeah.
We really need to... And especially since, you know, his story's been told in, like, TV, comics. Like, how many TV series have we seen him...
Cartoons.
Meet Lois Lane and fall in love and do the same things? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a sidetrack.
An actual sidetrack.
Right. Anyway, the last superhero movie was Captain America, which I just saw.
Oh, I have not seen either. And I've heard that one's really good.
That was fun. You know, that one might actually take my vote for my favorite of the summer, actually.
And actually, that one makes a lot more sense for an origin story because it's placed in a different time period. And
which was really one of the really fun things about it. I mean, it was a very different kind of set in World War II. I love the setting. Plus, it was just really fun. The enemies are these souped-up Nazis, in a sense, so you know that you're getting to very campy territory, but it's fun. It's got a lot of heart to it, too. So that might very well be my favorite of the summer.
And I heard Hugo Weaving is pretty awesome, too.
Yeah, Hugo Weaving is also always a great bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, you add him to a movie, you have a great bad guy. Or Elf.
And Tommy Lee Jones was just kind of icing on it.
That's true. Anything with Tommy Lee Jones.
And it ties in really nice. It got me really excited because there's actually because you know how all these Marvel movies have a thing after the credits now.
Oh, yeah.
This one turned out to be like the first mini teaser for it. I mean, it wasn't just a scene. It started off with a scene, but then it turned into a actual teaser for the Avengers.
Oh, nice.
So it got me pretty excited.
Avengers
for it.
Should be pretty awesome.
I mean, I love what Marvel's doing with that. I wish DC. Problem with DC is that they've got all their, it's a good and bad thing, I guess, but they've got all their property rights are tied up with one studio, Warner Brothers, whereas Marvel has been doing all these other things on different studios. Although Marvel, I think the Marvel studios itself have been doing, getting ready for this Avengers thing, so maybe that doesn't really apply. So never mind what I just said.
Let's see, other good, Super 8.
Super 8.
Super 8 was a fabulous movie. Yeah. That might take my favorite movie of the summer.
Yeah, it'd be hard to argue with.
Because it was just, it had all the energy of Goonies. It had all the crazy monster stuff at Cloverfield. Mm-hmm. It had some good cinematography. Different sort of story. I mean, it's still an alien story.
Well, I think the funny thing about Super 8 is that I don't know if you could pick out any one piece that was wholly unique to it. I mean, kids running around having adventures, that screams 80s stuff. Yeah. Monster story.
We've done a thousand of them.
But it's the combination of all the parts and putting kind of a fresh coat of paint on it, and it makes it so much fun.
Yeah, and all the parts worked really well together. And even, throwaway characters in the background were great. I mean, like sisters arguing that, have nothing to do with the plot at all.
Uh-huh. And I definitely saw some people use the phrase mint for a few weeks on Facebook afterwards.
My brother did.
Yeah. That's so mint.
And yeah, the language was just clever. I mean, the dialogue was witty. Mm-hmm. It just played at a lot of different levels really well.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and that's always fun when you find a movie it plays, to your action level and to your emotional level and to, it's quirky.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel quite like anything else.
Yeah. Now, did you see any animated movies this summer?
You know what? I don't know that I have.
You know, it struck.
You saw Winnie the Pooh, right?
I saw Winnie the Pooh. I did not get to see Cars. I have not seen Cars 2
yet. I have
not
either.
Which is kind of shocking that there was a Pixar movie out that I have not gone to see.
Yeah. Normally, I'm get there first week, but I didn't do it for Cars 2. And then I heard not bad things, but lackluster things about it.
Which I think might be another, one of these critic things that. Because I've heard from some people whose opinion I really trust that absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and so. I haven't seen it. I would like to see it. Cars was always one of my lesser favorites of Pixar. I think that's part of the reason I didn't get there. Not because it was bad, it just didn't connect with me in the same way some of them do.
Yeah, no, yeah, that didn't feel like it drove you to the theater.
Yeah.
And which may have been.
No pun intended.
Which may have been a factor in it getting bad reviews. It is kind of sad that's the first poorly reviewed.
That is true. It is kind of sad. Mm-hmm. We got Brave next year.
Yeah. But Winnie the Pooh was really, really good. And I kind of ranted about this on Facebook the other day, but I was like, why did Winnie the Pooh not make as much money as the Smurfs did? Because from all accounts, the Smurfs was just wretched. And here's the thing. A lot of people think that they've outgrown Winnie the Pooh. It was a clever movie. I mean, I took my
I was interested to go see it, but I had no opportunity.
I mean, beautiful animation. I took my 15-year-old sister to see it.
And 2D animation.
Yeah, and 2D animation.
Which is gold now, rare. Yeah. It's mint.
Which is one of the which is one of the reasons why I went to see it, just because you don't get to see hand drawn animation in theater very much anymore. But I mean, it was funny. We laughed a lot at it. And I mean, it was sweet, and it's gonna be perfect for play schoolers, but I think teenagers could enjoy it too, just to And honestly, even if you're not a parent, chances are you might be someday. So it's good practice for that.
I need to put that on my list of things to watch.
Yeah.
We can kind of slip under the radar there in some ways.
Well, I read an interesting forum post where someone pointed out, you know, Disney really didn't market it as much as some other stuff. I think this happens with Disney sometimes when they've got two movies coming out kind of close to the same time, that they'll focus all their attention on one thing. I think they hyped up Cars 2 a lot and didn't give much to
it. It's a shame because sometimes just people not know it because there's so many movies, you don't see the ads, you just forget about it. Mm-hmm. Well, and plus someone said Harry Potter was out that weekend, right?
Yeah, which is true.
Which I didn't see. I saw, and I thought I really enjoyed it. I mean, I've read the novels. And it's been long enough that I don't remember enough details. My brother, who's fanatical about the details, sometimes gets mad at the movies. This one, he liked a good deal. But we were talking about at the end that they've really focused, and because they have to for a movie, very, very strictly on Harry and his two friends. Because in the books, there's just cast of thousands. And all of them are interesting, funny, backstory sort of people. So when you get to this last one, there's people dying, and some of the motion's gone because you didn't have the time invested in them you did in the book. Hmm. But I think was the best way to do it as a movie because it's completely about Harry and Ron and Hermione. Okay. And I thought it was a good end. I really do think some of the later movies have been cinematically some of the best movies.
Yeah, I've heard some people say that the movies just got better as they went on, which is interesting for a series.
And it was well-paced. I know some people complain about part one being kind of slow, and I enjoyed it. It's not one I would just put in randomly, but it is it's a lot set up, and part two is all the payoff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was entertaining.
I still have to watch. I had hoped to go through a marathon of the Harry Potter movies, but I didn't. I was too cheap. I didn't want to just go rent them and pay for them. So I haven't actually gotten around to it yet. Because you may guess from our discussion last time, I've not actually seen most of the Harry Potter movies yet. So obviously, I did not go to see that one.
And then I think the last one I have on my list is Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, yeah. That was. Man, I think Cowboys and Aliens, if you think the title, or if you think that, well, yeah, if you think the title and the concept are awesome, then you'll enjoy the movie.
I read Destroyer. Nathan just, you know, I read my copy.
Uh-huh.
Very pulpy. Cowboys and Aliens, very pulpy. It's just about, you know, you got all the cowboy stuff and all the alien stuff, and they smash it together, and...
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just...
It's no big high concept,
Not at all. I mean, it's just, if you...
But
if,
I don't care, you know?
If you get excited about a concept of looking at a big screen, look, there's cowboys fighting aliens. You'll enjoy it. That's all you really need to know.
I think people looking for more were disappointed.
Yeah.
Which I can get. And plus, Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Come on.
I love that speech that he was giving to Noah Ringer, the kid, at some point, which ends with him saying, "Be a man." And I kind of leaned over to Joanna and Eric when we were watching. It's like, if Harrison Ford tells me to be a man, I'm going to be a man.
So there was a lot of... I very rarely went to the movies and was disappointed.
No, yeah. Well, I think part of that is that you have good taste. So.
Well, and I know what I'm expecting, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going in for normally just some sort of fun, exciting... It seemed like there was some random thing I saw that I haven't talked about, but it probably wasn't one of the big ones.
I think... I'm trying to remember. I think I've gone over everything that I saw. Because, I mean, yeah, I stuck with mainly the big blockbuster stuff. I didn't go see Transformers because I never saw the second one. And
yeah, I didn't see Transformers.
Never heard much that really urged me to go. I didn't really go see any comedies because I don't really care for any of the...
Modern comedies are very hit and miss.
Yeah.
Or more miss than hit.
Yeah, very much more miss than hit, in my opinion. Which would make for an interesting podcast topic.
Possibly. Yeah. So we'll have to think about that, too.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll wrap up our take on Tales.
Mm-hmm. So... Go see movies. Is our lesson.
And honestly, a lot of you probably see more movies than we have. But
yeah, if there's something that we missed that you really, really like, let us know. Or if you think that...
We're completely off base with something.
Yeah.
Tell us and we'll ignore you. No, we'd like to hear...
X-Men is overrated. No, it's not. That's just my DC fanboyism coming out there.
Well, Wolverine's probably overrated.
Well, okay. But although his
I still enjoy Wolverine despite the fact that he's like in everything.
Although his cameo in this one was kind of humorous, I thought.
Yeah. So I guess we'll move on to contact info.
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay.
First off, just a quick reminder that if you want to record us a little segment, don't feel like you have to have, I mean, Nick and I just record this on our laptop microphone, so it's pretty easy to do. Just get out QuickTime and you can record a quick little thing for us. If there's something that you wanted to, you'd been meaning to tell us about one of our podcasts, something that we got wrong or that you wanted to include.
Something you wanted to add, you just really wanted to butt in, but you were listening and you couldn't get in.
Yeah, then go ahead and record that. Send it to us at derailedtrains@gmail.com.
We'll need it in the next, what, 3-4 weeks?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, from the time this comes out, actually, probably a little less than that.
Yeah, if you get if you get it to us by September 15th, you'll probably be safe. You have a few days after, but there's something to shoot for it.
Yeah, we'd love to have some stuff. And then you can also visit us on our website, derailedtrainsofthought.blogspot.com. We love comments. Come start an argument or a discussion.
And even if it's been a while, if you've been catching up, I know sometimes people get behind, which is cool. Don't feel that you can't input, because we get each comment and we read them all.
Yep, we make sure we look at the old stuff. And subscribe to us on iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, if you do, leave a comment on iTunes. That'd be awesome. Just reviews.
Reviews that would kind of bump
up. Yeah, check today and like, oh yeah, we don't have any reviews. So. Yeah.
So basically, we have a lot of work for you to do.
Yes. But we'll keep coming out with podcasts, and that's our end of the day.
Yep.
So I guess that's it. Oh, I got to introduce my soundtrack.
Yeah, it's you.
Yep. I've been wanting to do a soundtrack from AnimeRemix.com, I think. Yeah.
I guess.
It's like Overclocked Remix, except on a much smaller scale. There's only about 100 songs. They're not always quite to the level, Overclocked Remix, but I felt like, well, I should do something from there. They have a great Evangelion remix called the Ray 4, which is the theme for Ray, who's a horribly tragic character. And the whole show, you know, just...
Isn't every character in Evangelion a horribly tragic character?
Yes, except that one, what's his name, is not quite as tragic as the rest of them. I don't even remember his name. He's like Masato's boyfriend.
Oh. Well,
he doesn't have personal problems. He gets killed randomly while he's in his garden, like, watering the melons or whatever.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah. But yeah, he's not like Asuka in her bathtub killing herself, or Rei, who has more than four of herself. But so Rei 4, this is remixed by Jeremy Robson, who does a lot of orchestral remixes. He has a great Final Fantasy VII one on Overclocked, if you ever go to. Actually, he has a great Kefka one he did with someone else. I think, well, is that him? I think it is. But this is Rei 4, I've said like 4 times now. I hope you enjoy it. It's kind of a dramatic, symphonic. I really enjoy it. So this has been Nick.
And this has been Tim.
Bye.
So long.
Thanks for all the fish.
derailed trains of thought.
You know what's so great about camping? It's intense.
It's intense. So, Tim, I heard, outside of a dog, a book's a man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. Waka, waka, waka. Tim, does this phone remind you of anything?
Well, it does ring a bell. Wow.
Oh, boy. Now, that's comedy.